Mr. Henry Van Emden, Reel 2. Now, we were talking about your time in London before you joined the army. One thing we haven't mentioned is that you were from a Jewish family. Did that affect your life much? Were you aware of it? Were you an observant family? You said, I mean, you're going out Friday night, so it sounds like not.
Yes, I wasn't very religious.
And nor were your family then?
No.
Were you aware of, did it make you particularly aware of what was going on in Germany?
Oh yes, I was fully aware of it. I was fully aware I was Jewish, and I was fully aware of what was going on in London, in Ridley Road, with the black shirts, and also with Hitler and all the rest of it, because I was fully aware what was going on, but that was it.
But you personally and your family weren't religious observant at all? So
not very religious, no.
Now, so what happened next then? How did you is the next thing when you get called up, or did you volunteer?
No, so when that idea got scuppered, got turned away, I was friendly with another chap there, and it turned out he was a lieutenant general in the army. And a lieutenant general is a very high-ranking officer. There were only two lieutenant generals in the whole of England, one in charge of the north and one in charge of the south, and he was in charge of the south. For example, in the present-day war with Iraq, the highest-ranking British officer out there over the whole lot is a lieutenant general. Anyway, this chap said to me, you're very interested in music, aren't you? And I hear very high reports about your ability. I said, thank you. So he said, if you decide to want to go in the army, you've got three alternatives. You can either try and become an officer, you can try and become an NCO, in which case, in either case, you will have very much time for music, I can assure you, because you'll be responsible for men. But if you try and go on a course, you're in 6 weeks training, at the end of that you go in front of a board of officers and suggest that you'd be, they'll ask you what you think, and you say, it would be a good idea if I could go on a tradesman's course, because I could be more useful in the army as a tradesman doing a responsible job than, for instance, as a pioneer or a signalist. So he said, you suggest that. So I did the other called up.
And when were you called up?
September 3rd, 1942.
And what was the actual procedure of the call-up? Do you remember what happened to you?
I went in front of a board of doctors, about a dozen doctors, and each one had examined a different part of you. And at the end of it, they declared you either you're unfit or you're fit. And I was A1, so they declared me A1. So I was fit to go in to be called up. And then I went to a place in Kent, East Kent Regiment or something. And
you don't remember what the place was?
The place, I can't remember the name of the place I got called up.
Now, this was just as an ordinary infantryman at the time.
An ordinary private soldier, yeah. Yes, an ordinary soldier. And the idea of the NCOs was to make you feel the biggest useless idiot that I've ever come across. And they were carrying on, we got a squad of men. They said, you call yourself men, look at this. You're nothing but a load of old rubbish. I don't know how I'm going to possibly train people like you. What job I got? I can't believe I've got to do this. And he made you feel like that.
The small, only thing, very small.
Very, very small. Even at night time, I could hear some of the lads were crying because they'd never experienced anything like that. As far as I'm concerned, I got over it because I just ignored what they were saying. You wasn't allowed to talk back. I ignored what they were saying, and I used to think to myself, I know what you can do, I know what I can do, I'm worth 10 of you, so I'm not bothered, you can say what you like.
Now, what kind of training were you doing on your basic training?
Basic training was learning drilling, marching up and down.
What did you think of drill?
Personally, I thought it was a waste of time.
Now, why? What was a waste of time about it? Did you not understand why they were doing it? Or?
Well, you had to do it, I suppose, for discipline. But I wasn't that keen on it. And I thought, I'm going to get out of this as soon as I can. And then they taught you how to fire a rifle, and you had to fire a machine gun. And I had excellent eyesight, and I got so efficient on both of them that towards the end of the course, some people, a sergeant and an officer, came over to me and fire that brain gun, and I shot the centre of the bull out. So I said, that's very good. I said, now take it to pieces. So he showed me it beforehand, how to take it to pieces, in case it jammed. And they showed me how to take it to pieces and put it back again. So I said, right, now take it to pieces and put it back again. Oh, by the way, you're going to be blindfolded before you can do that. Oh, they blindfolded me, but I knew what I had to do, and I did it. And I put it back together, and it fired. So I said, that's excellent, that's wonderful. We'll get you a special mark for that first-class brain gunner, and you get extra money for it. Thank you. And
what about the rifle? How we use a rifle?
Very good. Very good. It's a little example of on a fun fair once with on the rifle range. So I had a shot to see if a zero shot. In other words, you aim for the centre of the bullet and you see where the bullet goes. It goes low or high or left and right, so you know how to adjust it when you're firing. So I did this, and the chap said, you're not bad. I said, thank you. He said, let's have a competition. I said, all right, what do you want to do? He said, I'll put a matchstick up there instead of that. I said, okay. He put the matchstick up there, he fired and missed. I fired and broke the matchstick in half. So that was it.
So what made you such a good shot, do you think it was? Eyesight, hands,
coordination? I had good coordination, and I was keen. I was keen because I was so fed up with taking it from the Germans with their bombs and so on. Now I've got a chance to do something myself in a tiny, minute way to get back at them. And I was very keen. And then I went in front of this board, and they said, you've done very well so far. And they looked at me and said, oh, you were working at Cadbury Hall. I said, yeah. So what do you think? I said, well, I think if you could get me an opportunity to go on a tradesman's course, I could learn. So I said, yeah, we need technical mechanical transport men. So, yes, you can go on that course and make sure you do well. Meanwhile, this general, before I got called up, said to me, if you go on this course, you must do well. The worse you do, the worse company you're going to get into. And the better you do, the better career you're going to have. So I went on this course.
Now, where was the course and who was it with?
It was a 6 weeks course, the Army Training Depot.
But you're not in the Army Royal Army Service Corps yet?
Yeah, I think I was. But you get allocated a company, I think so. I'm not sure.
And where was it
I had to go on this course. There were about 50 men on the course. And so forewarned is forearmed, and every day I listened to what they were saying, and if I'm making notes all the time, and I studied the evening. Instead of going out around the pub like most of them, I was studying.
Now, what were you studying? You haven't said that. What were you
I was studying how to be different parts of an engine. All the different parts of an engine. If an engine goes wrong and the part needs replacing, you've got to know which part so you can get it replaced straight away.
So it's a mechanics course?
A mechanical course. And I stuck at that for 6 weeks. And each morning I said, excuse me, sir, I don't know what you said about this. Can you repeat it for me? Oh, yes, of course, blah, blah, blah. Thanks very much. So I got a few slickers, but it didn't matter to me. At the end of the course, when it finished, they had an examination. And to my intense pleasure, I came top. So having come top, I was sent to a holding company where they just sort you out where you're going to go. And after a little while, I got posted to a place called Stoney Castle Camp, S-T-O-N-E-Y Castle Camp. It was a tremendous great area with about maybe a dozen fields, big fields, and each one had loads of companies in it. And they were nearly all made up, ready to go somewhere.
Now, when was this? Is this into
1943.
And do you know what part of 43? No. It's all right, 43 will do. And who were you joining there?
I joined 704 Company, RASC. And when I got there, I was met by a sergeant and a sergeant major. And they greeted me very nicely. Oh, welcome to the company. You must have done something special to get in this company. I said, don't think so, not really. I said, I did go on this course of technical mechanical transport and I came top. Ah, that explains it. Okay, well, make sure tomorrow morning you put your best suit on, look nice and smart, and we'll take you in to see the commanding officer. They were gentlemen. For the first time, I was treated like a person instead of an idiot. So that was good. So we went and marched into the commanding officer, and he looked up. He said, oh, good morning, gentlemen. He said, I shan't need you, and I shan't need you. Thank you very much. Instead of saying dismiss, he just said, I shan't need you. So I saluted and left. He said, sit down. And I'm talking to him like I'm talking to you now. He looks at my record. He said, yes, from what I can see, you'll be a great asset to this company on the transport side. I'm not sure exactly what yet, but you'll be something on the transport side which will be a great help to me, I'm sure. Now, meanwhile, I noticed you're a first-class musician. I said, thank you very much indeed. So he said, what I'd like you to do, I want to get a small band for this unit as well when we go abroad, so we can keep the men's morale up and cheerful. Go around and see if you can find another three or four musicians, but they've got to be absolutely top class, otherwise it's no good. And if you do get somewhere like that, you can let me know. So he said to a sergeant major, he said, this man Vanimden will go out, he's got a free hand to go and have a look around the camps, and he can report back as and when he can find what he wants. So now I had a free hand. Thank you. Off I went. It took me a long while. It took me weeks because I was going around all different companies and fields, and I got fed up because I couldn't find anything worthwhile. And then I come to a great big marquee at the end of the field, and I heard music. So I listened. It sounded good. So I went in when they finished. I said, do you mind if I sit here and listen? Oh, we can't have that because we're disturbed. I said, no, I'll sit in the back. I'm on my own. I haven't got anybody with me. And I won't say anything. If it still disturbs you, I'll have to go. All right. So when they finished, I said, there's a break of piano, bass, drums and trumpet. So I said, when are you rehearsing again? I said, tomorrow. Do you mind if I come along? No, okay. I said, do you mind if I bring a saxophone? Oh, yeah, we can't have that. We've had this before and it's not good enough. I said, well, give me an opportunity. I'll play just a few bars or something. And if you don't like it, stop. And I'll walk out. I said, oh, all right. So the following day I went out, and I did play a few bars for the first number of the blimp, and they all stopped. I looked round. What did they stop for? You didn't say you played like that. Oh. So I said, can I carry on? Of course. So I said, why is the pianist always playing in F? How do you know that? I said, because I've got a pair of ears and I can... And I'm a musician, I can soon tell if anything's not right. Well, he can only play in F. He's a good pianist, but he can only play in F. Oh. So I said, you're rehearsing tomorrow? He said, yeah. It's like 2 o'clock. So I said to the pianist, can you be here at 1 o'clock? Yeah. I said, meet me here at 1 o'clock. So I said to him, you've got to play things like In the Mood, which are popular, and it's got to be in A flat. And you can't play in A flat. No. I said, by the time I'm finished this afternoon, you will play in A-flat. He didn't even know I played the piano until I sat down. And I taught him, it was only a few chords, it wasn't very difficult. And I taught him those few chords. He didn't have to play a solo, didn't have to just play those right chords in the order. And to help him, every time I played a chord, he got to change it. I say, now, and he changed. So the boys were amazed when they came back. I said, we're going to play In the Mood in A-flat. They said, we can't. I said, yes, you can. Here we go. And of course he played it in A-flat, and they went, barmy. And after that, it was fine. So I said to the major, I said, I found what you want, but I don't want to go and walk into a tent and hear them. A senior officer, they'll freeze. I said, but I'll leave a flap open accidentally, and you'll be able to hear it all right, and let me know what you think. He said, right. He did that, and he said, yes, it's what I want. He said, find out if they want to join the company, their name, rank and number, and who they're with, and tell me. So I did. So I said to them, how'd you like to join my company? can't do that. We're in different companies, different things. I said, he said, you'll never do it. I said, I'm sure I won't. But I know somebody who can. So I said, so I took him round, introduced him to the sergeants and sergeant major, and they liked it. Anyway, about a week later, three, four very puzzled men said, we've been posted to your company, you've now got a band. And that's my first army band. And it was brilliant. Of course, I did a lot of arrangements for them, because I could arrange music. And I taught them what I wanted, and it worked.
And what were you playing? What was the stuff you played for the lads?
Popular stuff of the 1940s, you can say. You'll never know how much I love you. Long ago and far away. Beat me, daddy, ate to the bar. Boogie, woogie. And that sort of thing. Latest popular. Like you hear the pops today, which is ridiculous. Those days it was good music, and we played it. And it was eventually the company was made up. It was a specialist company because all the companies of the RASC had so many 3-ton lorries, a 1500 weight runabout, and a car for the major, for the commanding officer. And that's what they had. But we had that plus about 10-ton lorries. And the only men allowed to go anywhere near those 10-ton lorries were the long-distance lorry drivers in Civvy Street, who were now in the army, and of course they were allowed to drive them. And they were a big lot of rogues you've ever come across in your life. A lorry would hold a case about so big, which contained enough rations for 14 men for one day. Cigarettes and food, chocolate. And they had to load about 400 of these on their wagon. So I got to about 395, and I said, oh, look at that bloke over there. How much are we up to? We're up to 390. Oh, am I right? And they pinched a few of these cases, which, of course, they promptly sold off to other people, and they had a lot of money.
And what were you doing? I mean, you were doing the dance band, but did you have a job in the...
Oh, unit? Yes, I'm sorry, yes.
So what did you do in
by
the...
That time, by that time, I was told that we're going to go abroad and we're going to be in the Guards Armour Division, which is an elite division, and your job will be to be in charge of a petrol dump, and as the tanks are going to move off into a battle's attack, they want petrol and oil. And my job was to go up to the front line with 7 lorries, full up with stuff, and deliver it to the tank commander, whoever he was, get a signature, back to the base, and get another load, and then move forward. As they move forward, we move forward. And the only one that could sign my chit was the major. It had to be a major or a colonel, because Eisenhower had got this idea that we're going to invade France. And when we do, he doesn't want his madcap running off. He wants to go like this in a broad front. And therefore, strictly rationed petrol. We were stuck in... we're out on the beach.
Now, hang on, slow down. Now, how did you practice for this back in... I mean, how did you get to know what you had to do in charge of a petrol dump?
The major told me. The major explained. He said... I had the job of working out in England, in Norfolk, how many gallons of petrol it would need to move a 50-ton tank, a mile, 10 miles, 20 miles, 50 miles, how much oil it would use, and then check it with other tanks. Don't take this one tank. And when you've done that, then you can work out exactly how much petrol and oil you will need to send a tank 50 miles in front of you. Multiply that by a dozen tanks or 100 tanks, whatever they're going to do, and then you know exactly how much petrol and oil you've got to have in your dump.
Now, where would you get the petrol and oil from? You?
From the... In England, it didn't matter that much because we weren't invading. When we invaded France, there was a... once it got underway, the first going off...
Hang on, we're running ahead again then. Okay, so you didn't practice that back in England, in exercises?
No, I didn't practice anything on that. I knew exactly what I had. I was good at figures. They relied on me. And even the colonel used to come around and watch what I'm doing. I said, yes, you're doing fine. And I had the job of working that out. And then once I've worked it out, that was all I had to do until we went to France. Meanwhile,
Were you on any of the big exercises in England?
I dropped a clanger, to put it mildly. The colonel came around one day. I'm in the office. I've done what I wanted to do. I'm a bit fed up. And he said to a couple of men who was in there with me, he said, there's a course going for, I think, 6 weeks. And it's lovely sunshine. It's in the open air. And you'll enjoy it. So if you'd like to volunteer to go on it, then you can, well, going up to Yorkshire or something, Shipton in Yorkshire. But we're coming back here. And then you can rejoin us again after you've been on this course. So, all right. What I didn't realise, when we got on this course, it was a commando course. And everything had to be done at the double. And you were taught unarmed combat. The idea being you killed somebody else before they killed you. And you learned how to defend yourself. And some of it came in handy in Civvy Street afterwards. But you learnt all this. And then you had to go on the second toughest commando course in the country. I don't know what the toughest one was like. That was bad enough, because you had to run up to a wall to start with, and the wall was 15 feet high. Two men at the bottom, and they had to, you put your foot in their hand, and then they went woof, and you shot up, and you had to grab the top, climb over, you got a gun, you climbed over, and then you looked down, and there was water down below, and 15 feet's a long way you looked down. And so they said, jump. I said, no blooming fear. And they started firing live ammunition. And they were allowed 10% casualties on this stunt. So when you saw a bullet coming closer to you, you jumped. And hey, you jump. And you go through that, and you had to go through other things. And finish up, you had to crawl under a tarpaulin, a quite big tarpaulin, which was filled up with gas, because you had your gas mask on. And when you got out to the other side, it finished you. You've got to fire five rounds of ammunition and hit the target. And that was the end of the course. If you passed, if you missed it, you didn't pass. If you hit them, you passed. Didn't have to get a bullseye as long as you hit the target. So we did that, and I hit the target and collapsed in a heap virtually with everybody else. But that was it. Then we went in the main hall. I made a big fuss of us and a very nice meal. And they said, you've all passed, very good, go back to your units. And I was fit as a fiddle. And that was it, I did it. And it came in very handy. They'd got different things to distinguish people. When you landed in France, it was all bocage country, in other words, field.
Don't run ahead.
I'm going two heads off.
No, it's all right. So what happened next, then, after the commando course? Before
D-Day? I rejoined my unit. I rejoined my unit and just carried on there. There was one or two exercises. I only went on one, and that one I wasn't very happy about.
Why not?
Three of us was on this. We had the test was three of us had no money, and we had to go out to a certain location and then come back to the camp again. It was a long way, so you didn't get back too early evening. Naturally, we got lost. Couldn't find anything or anywhere or anybody to help us. We finally got back to the unit late at night. Starving hungry, went into the kitchen and found there was cocoa there, stale bread and liver. And I can't eat liver. So I had stale bread and cocoa to assuage my thirst and my hunger. And that's how I got, that's what I had. And that was the only one I went on.
Rank were you? Were you still just would it be a driver in the RMC, a private?
But the lowest rank in the RAC is a driver.
And what, is that what you were still?
When I started.
So what were
no,
you?
But once I passed that course, I was upgraded to a tradesman first class, which meant that I was my own man. Instead of having to sort of do everything else and go on parades and guard duties and that sort of thing, I was in charge I was in charge now. I was in charge of this very important petrol dump. And
but you weren't a corporal?
No, I was offered promotion by being the major. But I said, no, if I do that, I can't concentrate on music. And once I finish in the evening with my duties and I'm clear, I can just carry on with my music. And he quite understood that, and he said, OK, fine. And that's what I did.
Now, what about preparations for D-Day?
I'll tell you why I'm laughing. All the men, all the drivers, had the job in May of waterproofing all their vehicles.
Tell me about that.
The idea was that if you sealed the top of the sparking plugs with rubber or wax, extended the exhaust pipe from the bottom of the vehicle to right to the top in the air, and that had to be done by every vehicle. The men who did it were being watched by NCOs and officers to see that everything was going all right, because the idea was you landed in the water, and they didn't want the wagons to conk out in the water. So that's why they did that. Everybody was busy except me. So I got fed up. So I decided to volunteer to go on a course of where you learnt to disable mines and booby traps, telemines, booby traps and that sort of thing. You're told how to render them harmless. You learnt that. And I was on that for a week.
And what do you remember of that? That sounds a bit...
Pardon?
Sounds difficult. Tell me about that.
For instance, they would leave... you go into a room, there'd be a desk and a drawer. So you open the drawer, and there's a nice-looking pen in there. Well, that's nice. You pick it up, it's attached to a mine, a small mine, and it blows your hand off. A bigger one would kill you. When... There was another thing they did, is they got a pot like a cocoa tin with three prongs sticking out in the air. And they would bury this, the Germans would bury it in a field. There's only one entrance where the men walk in. And they buried it about 30 yards inside the field in the grass. You couldn't see it. And the men walked in on a platoon of 30 men in threes. And as they marched in, when the first man got onto that part where the booby trap was, as his foot came down, it would press the prongs into the machine, into this container. Nothing would happen. About 5 seconds later, a minor explosion would occur, and the can was blown about 5 foot in the air. And a fraction of a second later, a great big explosion took place, and it was filled up with the ball bearings. It was filled up with ball bearings. The ball bearings scattered all over the place and knocked a whole platoon of men out. So you didn't miss one of those. And they planted a lot of those things in the fields as they retreated.